It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Here's a question for you. Did you pick up a new office chair or kitchen gadget on sale on Amazon this week? I am definitely in that camp. Amazon stock soared during its now annual sales event, Amazon Prime Days. And our online shopping habits have been good for Amazon founder and CEO Jeff Bezos, who's the wealthiest person in the world. But how good has Amazon been to its workforce and the communities where its warehouses are located? WPR host Keely Boltina talked with a journalist who's investigating how Amazon has transformed our economy and our society. James Ball is the global editor of the Bureau of Investigative Journalism. He wrote the United States of Amazon series for Tortoise Media.
And we've got a caller on the line now. Steve from Sun Prairie is thinking about this combination. Good morning, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
I don't want to date myself here, but I remember watching the great Dr. Milton Friedman on a Phil Donahue episode, probably in the late 70s, early 80s. And Phil Donahue was lamenting how big Kmart was getting and how Kmart was knocking all the mom-and-pop businesses out. And he said, what's going to happen if Sears buys Kmart? They'll rule the world. Well, we all know what happened. Sears bought Kmart, and they're both bankrupt. So there will be other companies that come and take market share away from Amazon when Amazon loses its ability to meet with the client, the customer's expectations are. That's just the history of capitalism.
Steve, thanks for that line of thinking. And James, what do you think about Steve's comment? Can someone just replace Amazon? Is it different?
Steve makes a really good point. And actually, I think Jeff Bezos would agree with him. Bezos is kind of an interesting CEO. Some tech CEOs start to think of themselves as like quite strange, sort of evangelical. The CEO of which used to be called WeWork, talked about building a company that would last 1,000 years, that his children and grandchildren would take over as if it's an ancient empire. Bezos says companies come and companies go. He expects Amazon to decline and to die, but he wants that to happen long after he dies, which is pretty understandable. And so he talks about day one companies and day two. And he says day one companies are trying to grow. They're seeing it as the start of something. They're being very sort of relentlessly focused on expansion, on doing more, doing what they can. And he says the second you become a day two company, it's the beginning of the end. It might take a long time, but essentially you're on managed decline. You're sort of heading towards the exit. And so, yes, Amazon won't be forever, but it intends to be around for quite a long time. And so is it about saying this company's got to take over the world and we'll never be able to handle it, like some people got overexcited on for Sears, for Kmart, for Walmart, you name it? No, it won't be forever. But how do we make sure while it's here, it's working in all of our interests and it's not sort of sucking the life out of the economy too much or taking too big a cost on workers or on society? And maybe we think the balance is just about right where it is. But I think we should at least ask ourselves the question on, is it? Because quite a few people who used to work there, there's even some analysts, will say it's a well-managed, very successful, very focused company, but it's focused on its customers and on its shareholders. Someone needs to look at the wider implications of it.
Talking with James Ball, who's an investigative journalist. His new series looks at the power and influence tech companies wield on our lives, focusing on Amazon today. And James, when you talk about that, making Amazon work while it's around, if it's not too big to fail, it is such a huge part of our economy. Sounds like you're talking regulation.
I think we probably are talking regulation. I think some people would probably like to see Amazon shut down tomorrow, but that would put hundreds of thousands of people out of work and actually deny a lot of people services they like. You know, it isn't just a store. A lot of the web runs on Amazon servers. That's a $40 billion a year business in revenue. You know, they've got our streaming services. They've got Audible. You probably sort of use Amazon services that you don't even know about. What we need to sort of look at is, are we doing enough to cover workers in an environment where Amazon's there? you know, is there a way to find unions that work for much more casual workforces? Should we have more protections in there to sort of look out for them? Are there things we could do to try and make sure that we feel like we're getting a fair amount of tax from companies like Amazon? A lot of brick and mortar stores sort of complain that they have to pay local taxes and Amazon doesn't. And so, of course, it can undercut them. Are there ways we can level the playing field? And if you're not American, and you can guess from my accent, I'm not, Britain gets no tax revenue from everything it sells with Amazon. We get some sales tax, but nothing from the profits. Should it be the case that if this company has sort of become one of our biggest retailers, should it not pay a bit of tax in each company it operates? That's kind of the questions for regulators. I think if they're looking at how do we bring it down for its own sake, that's kind of anti-competitive, that's anti-business, that's not going to help. But can we make sure it's benefiting everyone and not just a tiny group of owners? I think that's exactly what regulators and lawmakers should be looking at.
You mentioned taxes. What kind of taxes does Amazon actually pay?
So Amazon still actually doesn't make nearly as much profit as it could, which helps reduce it a lot. The main sort of things that Amazon pays is, depending where it locates, it does have to pay some local sales taxes and some taxes in countries. But like other multinationals, it's faced quite a lot of criticism for setting up quite elaborate structures that minimize how much corporation tax it pays. And obviously, that mainly affects the US and the US shareholders. Now, all of that's legal, and it's in line with a lot of other companies doing it. But some of the questions for countries around the world is, you know, we used to have UK-based retailers, or France had French retailers that would sell in the country and pay corporation tax and sort of feed through the system. One question that is being asked a lot in Europe is, hey, if Amazon makes, say, a third of its sales here, shouldn't it be paying about a third of its corporation tax here? Now, that's got to get a bit contentious all across the world. And so you might need lawmakers in the US and around the world to go, what's fair for these big companies? How much tax do we think they should be paying? How do we think they should pay it? And I think the risk is that all the regulators end up arguing with each other so much that Amazon and other tech giants can carry on pretty much not paying very much to anyone because we all try and wait to sort this out perfectly first.
You're saying Amazon is a global company, so you need a global approach if you expect to be able to set regulations or standards.
Yeah, there are things that countries can do on their own, and especially when it comes to looking after your workers or checking your conditions or making sure competition's fair. But there are limits to what you can do as one country. Even if you're a country as big as the US, which is sort of unusual now, but the EU overall is a bigger market than the US. It's bigger and it's richer if you count all 27 countries in it. My country is not in it anymore. But that means that it has to be taken very seriously. You've, of course, got growing markets in China and India across the world. And so one country can do a little bit, and if they have the will to do it, they should. But if everyone just focuses on their own thing, they kind of get a bit stuck because these are global companies and they can move jobs, they can move data, they can move warehouses and operations a lot more easily than they could 20 or 30 years ago.
And that was James Ball, global editor of the Bureau of Investigative Journalism, talking with WPR host Keely Baltina. Coming up, we learn about life in Wisconsin during the Great Depression. That's after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Our next guest was born in 1926, and she lived in western Wisconsin growing up through the hardship of the Great Depression. Buna Colburn Carlson has written a collection of short stories called Farm Girl, a Wisconsin Memoir. She goes by Bunny, and she recently shared her memories with WPR host Keely Baltina.
those of us who didn't live through the Great Depression, we've heard many stories about the struggles. Reading your essays, I feel like your nostalgia, maybe your optimism. Why are you grateful for being a farm kid in Wisconsin during such hard times?
Probably because I learned such wonderful lessons that you don't have to be a victim, that you can find joy, that you can manage with what you have, that that you can go on, you can do things, you can make do, you can make the best of what you have.
Did you see people helping people?
Oh yes, that was the way we lived. The neighbors helped each other, and even the down-and-out neighbor who really lacked everything would be brought a loaf of bread, a dinner. People helped each other on the farm. If someone were injured, there was someone to help fill in. Yes, it was not a bad time. I think somehow those times brought out the best in people.
You write that you, as a kid, you had jobs to do to help out the family and the farm in the summertime. And that work was long and it was hot. But then you had time to do your own thing. What do you remember about those hours to yourself?
We played the wonderful old phonograph in the upstairs. We read. We raided mother and dad's old books and magazines. We, depending on who was friends with whom, we played with our brothers and sisters. We explored the entire farm. As I say, we were free range, like the chickens.
Well, those chickens you mentioned too, and I think that resonates with a lot of farm kids, annoying the chickens and chasing the barn cats. That was part of your day.
Yes, that's right. And then, of course, we did have our jobs to do. And when they were done, mother and dad were very, very generous with us. We were able to explore. If we wanted to just sit and daydream, that was okay too.
Oh, you didn't always have to be moving.
No.
You mentioned the phonograph, and you talk about in your writing that one of your favorites was literally a broken record. Why was that special to you?
Because of the music that was on it. I loved the Dvorak's New World Symphony. The part that was on that particular record was the Going Home song, which is haunting and lovely, and apparently other people felt that same longing that it produces.
And you know other people loved it because it had a chunk out of it, a chip out of it, so you had to be careful with it, right?
That's right, yes. Oh, the records were so scratched and raspy. I'm surprised that we got anything out of them. But we played them over and over and over. And it was not battery powered or electricity powered. It was crank handle powered. So it was available all the time. We didn't have to wait for the battery to be recharged. There was, of course, no electricity. So no electric devices were available to us. But that was okay. We loved that photograph.
Food often shows up in your stories, learning to cook, baking for threshing day dinner, eating what you had, especially in the summertime, but all year round. What's the connection between your memories and food?
Well, everything that appeared on the table pretty much came from the farm. We had a part in raising it, in harvesting it, in picking it, and preserving it. So food was pretty important. And we were very fortunate to have farm produce. There were a lot of hungry people who did not have that. So we counted our blessings and helped with the harvesting, preparation, and enjoyment of the food as we had it. I didn't learn a lot about cooking at home. I watched my mother. I didn't participate as much as my sister did. She was more the indoor girl, and I was the outdoor kid. I did help with some of the, like canning corn or canning the pickles, the cucumbers. We kids helped when we could, but mother was the major domo in the kitchen.
Bunny Carlson grew up in western Wisconsin during the Great Depression. Her recent memoir called Farm Girl is a collection of short stories, short essays she's written about those times. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Bunny, one of the stories you have in your collection is called Uphill Both Ways, and most of us recognize that as part of a joke that people tell kids about how hard their lives were when they were little and that they had to walk to school uphill both ways. It wasn't exactly that bad, but your walk, it was long. What do you remember about those walks to school in Wisconsin winters in the 30s?
Oh, I remember how cold it was, how bone-chilling cold it was. And the snow, sometimes the wind had blown the snow off the road, but other times it was drifted across the road. And when the snowplow came through, sometimes it had to be the big caterpillar with cleats and lugs and big treads that left the road as unpleasant for walking as if they had not been plowed.
In the same story about walking to school, you write that for years during the Depression, your family had a car, but they didn't use it. Why?
They couldn't afford to operate it, couldn't afford gasoline, couldn't afford repairs, couldn't afford tires, couldn't afford, I'm not sure if the insurance was required at that time, but I assume there was something. But there was no way they could afford to operate it. At least 2 years, maybe three, early in the Depression.
You write that your parents made less than $700 a year once running the farm during one of those years. What did you see them sacrifice?
Oh, my mother never had new clothes. She made her dresses. She patched Dad's overalls to the point where the patches had patches. And those patches came from worn-out overalls, so they were not very sturdy. Yeah, it was a struggle, but it was not an unhappy life. Mother and Dad were optimistic, had a strong belief that they were capable and they could manage, and they did.
Where do you think they found that strength?
I don't know what kind of an inner strength they had, but they lived through disaster and they drew on some kind of an inner strength that I don't know. I don't know.
Have you found as the years have gone on that you've had to tap into some of that kind of inner strength that you've looked to them as an example?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, and I think people right now are finding the same kind of experience that we had in the Great Depression. The Depression left us with no resources, no money, people were hungry, and now people are having the same kind of difficulties, but due to the pandemic, and they're finding the same kind of inner resources if they choose to.
Bunny, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you for caring about this book.
And that was WPR host Keely Baltina talking with author Bunny Carlson. Bunny's new book is called Farm Girl, a Wisconsin memoir. It's a collection of essays about growing up near Plum City during the Great Depression. Coming up, we check in on voting with election officials from Oshkosh and Milwaukee County joining us. Long lines and missing ballots were a problem during the spring primary. We'll learn whether they're better prepared for Election Day, 18 days from now. What questions do you have about voting? What questions do you have about your ballot? How do you plan to vote? We're at 800-642-1234. You have a line to election officials to get your questions answered. We'll check in on election preparations right after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about casting a ballot. It is 18 days before Election Day. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A record high number of Wisconsin voters are voting absentee. As of yesterday, more than 785,000 voters have returned their absentee ballots. The Wisconsin Elections Commission says about 30,000 people are needed to staff polling sites statewide, and there's currently only a very slight shortage of poll workers. Have you made a plan to vote? Will you be voting by mail or early or in person on Election Day? What questions do you have about each option? Are you a poll volunteer? We're at 800-642-1234. Julietta Henry is Elections Director for the Milwaukee County Election Commission. Julietta, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
And
Thank you.
Sure. We also have Pamela Ubrig with us, City Clerk of Oshkosh. Pam, welcome to you.
Good morning.
Well, Pam, let's start with you. Because we're seeing this surge in absentee voting, if someone is voting absentee and they request a ballot online, how long should voters expect for that ballot to arrive in their mailbox?
Once we receive the request, within 24 hours of that, it is out in our mail. So they can monitor it on myvote.wi.gov when we create the label. So, shortly after it's submitted, they should receive it.
Yeah, that MyVote site, myvote.wi.gov, I call it the pizza tracker because you can see exactly where it is in the oven, right?
That's a good analogy.
Julietta, what options are there for returning your absentee ballot?
Well, in Milwaukee County, you have several options for returning your absentee ballot. You can return it directly to the clerk's office up until 8 p.m. on Election Day. In addition to that, we have various sites throughout the city. For the city of Milwaukee, for example, you can return it to any Milwaukee Public Library. They're open, and there's a 24-hour surveillance camera available, so you can turn it off any 7 days a week. And you can also return it to, again, all of the municipal clerk's offices.
And you could, I would suppose, put it back into the mail and return it that way.
Right, right. In the mail, as well as there are other in-person absentee sites that you can return it to as well, starting on Tuesday.
Well, let's take a call now. Jim is with us from River Falls with a question about his ballot. Jim, hi.
Good morning. Thanks for having the program. I was wondering, both myself and my wife have gotten our ballots in the mail, but with the questions of, whether somebody might dispute signature or something like that, if my wife said, well, maybe we should go and vote in person. So what's the procedure then if you've already gotten your ballot in the mail? Do you bring that in when you go to vote in person, or Do you just cast a ballot in person and throw these out that we got in the mail?
Jim, thanks. Pam, can you field that?
There's two options. If you choose not to use that ballot that was mailed to you, you could go to your clerk's office during early voting, in-person early voting. In Oshkosh, we're starting October 20th, Tuesday through Friday, and then we can make, she could make, or they could make the appropriate documentation on the computer, and then you could cast your ballot there, or you can take it to the polls, and they would document it at the poll, and a ballot could be issued to you.
Julietta, any else, any other thing you want to ask, say there for follow-up?
No, that's perfectly fine. They will spoil your ballot at the polls, and then, like she said, and then they will issue you a new ballot, because on the actual poll list, they will see that an absentee ballot was issued to you.
Julietta, what do clerks do when they do get an absentee ballot that the envelope is incomplete, or maybe there's an issue that it doesn't have a signature or address?
Typically what happens is when that occurs, a clerk, and especially now, they will return the ballot to the elector, so they will have an opportunity to correct it. And that's why we encourage everyone to vote as early as possible, so that if you have any issues with your ballot, it will be returned to you so you can correct it.
Pam, I'm wondering, do you have enough poll workers? What is your staffing situation at this point?
At this point, we are doing good, but, you know, we're 18 days out, and mm-hmm. things could change between now and then. But I know there are communities out in our state that are seriously in need of poll workers. So those individuals that would be willing to help out, I would encourage them to contact their clerk, town, or village clerks and see if they're in need of assistance on that day.
Pam, are you assembling more backups this election cycle than in past?
Yes.
Yeah, backup volunteers, yeah.
Yes.
Julietta, what are you seeing out there? Do you have enough poll workers?
Well, in Milwaukee County, we did receive information from all of our clerks actually on yesterday, and they are fine with poll workers. However, I do want to emphasize on Election Day, we are seeing that currently in the Milwaukee County, we have over 42% in the city of Milwaukee alone, individuals have voted absentee. So I don't know if our Election Day is going to be as busy as our central count locations regarding counting those absentee ballots.
Yeah, central count will have almost the lion's share of ballots, which will be needed to count there. We're talking with Julietta Henry, who is the elections director for the Milwaukee County Elections Commission. Pamela Ubrig is city clerk of Oshkosh. We're asking about preparations for Election Day, fielding your questions about casting a ballot at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Mary in Portage with a question. Hi, Mary.
Hi. We're wondering if we've always had a history of voting Democrat and then we would like to change to Republican or vice versa. What would you have to do? Is there any kind of a problem with that?
Julietta, what about changing party?
Well, in Wisconsin, you do not have to identify your party, so that is no problem. You have preference. You can vote for whomever you would like.
Unless it would be a partisan primary, I would assume.
Well, in the partisan primary, you have to stick to one party, so
right.
You can't cross over. But in this election, in the general election, you can vote for whomever you would like.
Mary, does that help?
Yes, and will there be any exit polling at every precinct, or is that just sporadic?
We do not conduct the exit polling. That is conducted by the various media outlets. And so at this point, they have been contacted our office. They normally do the week before the election, and they normally let us know where they would like to do exit polling so we can let the clerks know in advance.
Pam, and I would assume you have to, you can only maintain a certain distance in order even to conduct those exit polls. You have to be a certain distance away.
That is correct.
Yeah, yeah. I'm wondering, Pam, do you have enough PPE for poll workers? Are you outfitted?
Yes, we are. We will have the shields in for the tables that will put distance between the voter and the election workers. We will have the floors marked where the 6 feet distance. There will be gloves, masks, sanitizing, and we have somebody dedicated at each polling place that will specifically just be sanitizing constantly throughout the day.
All right. So that is a specific position in this particular election, is a sanitizing position.
Yeah, we've had that in April and in August.
How did that go?
It went very well.
Yeah. Julietta, you know, April's primary election saw long lines in Milwaukee. We saw those lines. Five polling places were open. So where are we at today in terms of ensuring that those long lines don't happen again in 18 days?
Yes. So in the city of Milwaukee, we have over 271 polling locations that will be open on that day, and we have over 300 countywide. So we do know, because of the outbreak of the COVID-19, we did have difficult situations in finding poll workers as well as locations. So this, we are prepared, and we know that right now we have over 300 polling locations throughout the Milwaukee County.
Is that pretty typical for a presidential election cycle?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. So it's basically the city of Milwaukee went from 280 to 271. So they were not able to secure approximately 9 of their normal locations that they have for every election. But I know they're well equipped. But right as of today, 40% of the voters have already requested an absentee ballot in the city of Milwaukee. And so I am going to suspect that the actual election day is going to be less voters there than we will find in typical elections.
Can you, Julietta, take us to central processing and explain what that's like to process those ballots?
Sure. So in the city of Milwaukee, or Milwaukee County, I should say, we have over 8 of our 19 municipalities that will be conducting central count on election night. So instead of the poll workers opening the ballots, that those ballots are opened at central count. And currently, the city of Milwaukee utilizes 13 high-speed voting machines to process their absentee ballots. They are able to process between 1,000 and 2,000 ballots per hour once they are open. The other 7 municipalities utilizes the DS-200 voting machines, and they're able to process approximately 500 absentee ballots per hour. And what occurs is they have a number of individuals working, teams working, and the city of Milwaukee will have 3 shifts of over 100 people working at each shift, because as of today, they have over 230,000 ballots that they will be processing. And overall, if you look at the state numbers, as far as the number of ballots that are in, I suspect the city of Milwaukee County will have over 25% of the total ballots requested from the state by Election Day once the actual voting begins at the polling locations.
Talking with Julietta Henry, Elections Director for the Milwaukee County Election Commission, Pamela Ubrig. We'll be back in a moment on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about polling site preparation, questions about casting a ballot. The Wisconsin Elections Commission announced yesterday that there are no widespread poll staffing gaps to shore up at this point heading into November. We're checking in with 2 election officials. Julietta Henry serves as Elections Director for the Milwaukee County Election Commission. And Pam Ubrig is here, City Clerk of Oshkosh. So, Pam, as we look at absentee tabulation, how will that work in Oshkosh?
We do not do central count here in Oshkosh. It's something that I'm very interested in, and I know there's a couple communities within Winnebago County that do use it, and it works well. That's something that I'm going to look into in 2021. But for this election, the ballots will be delivered to the polls and processed that day.
And when they're delivered to the polls, those ballots go to the precinct that ballot is supposed to be in?
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. I want to go back to the tech issues that we saw in the spring election, when there was a breakdown in some of those, between the Postal Service and getting those absentee ballots out. Julietta, you know, about nearly 2,700 voters in Milwaukee were not sent absentee ballots. Have those issues been resolved with the post office?
Yes, the issues that occurred at that time, they have been resolved. And we also asked individuals, the state has improved myvote.wi.gov. So you can track your ballot. You can see exactly when it was mailed out, when you should expect to receive it. And then once you send it back, you can also see that it was received by your municipal clerk's office. So we strongly encourage everyone to track their ballot at myvote.wi.gov.
We heard from Katie, called in from Oshkosh, Pam, and couldn't stay with us. But Katie says on the Oshkosh website, it says early voting is from October 20th through 30th. But Katie thought different dates were set on air, and just looking for some clarification on early voting, Pam.
Okay, if I misspoke, it is October 20th, Tuesday, through October 30th, which is that Friday. There are no weekend hours. It would be weekdays only.
And what type of identification do people need to do the early voting?
A photo ID if they're going to vote.
A photo ID. And, in terms of voter ID in Wisconsin, Julietta, it requires that photo identification to register. Can you explain what you need to register to vote?
Sure. To register to vote, you need to have the proper identification to prove your residence. And it does not have to be a photo identification, but you need that photo ID to vote. And to prove your residence, you need to bring with you either, it could be your driver's license, as long as it has the current address on it. However, you don't have to have the current address on your driver's license to vote if you are already registered. In addition to that, it could be a utility bill. It could be a bank statement, but it has to show your address where you live.
So in terms of knowing your status, Julietta, how do you check the status of your registration?
Again, you can go directly to myvote.wi.gov. It is one-stop shopping. It can give you all the information you need to know. Verify that you are registered before you go to the polls. Also verify and check to see who's on your ballot so you will know who to vote for when you arrive. And then if you've requested an absentee ballot, you can also verify that that ballot has been indeed returned to your municipal clerk's office.
We're talking about voting, and we have Julietta Henry, who is Elections Director for the Milwaukee County Elections Commission. Pam Ubrig is the City Clerk of Oshkosh. 18 days before Election Day, and they're fielding your questions about casting a ballot at 800-642-1234. Pam, what has changed for you as a city clerk as you operate elections amid a pandemic?
We have taken into the consideration of all the necessary steps to ensure that the voters and the workers have a safe environment to be able to cast their ballot and to serve the voters. That's my number one.
Yeah. There's so much riding on you, though. I mean, city clerks, all 1,850 are, I'm sure, just working feverishly at this point. How supportive is that network out there? Do you feel like you have people to turn to in order to get this work done?
I feel in Winnebago County we have a really great network that we lean on each other, and we discuss things and we assist each other.
Julietta, how is it for you to facilitate an election during a pandemic?
It has been extremely challenging, but we too have been blessed with having the correct support and the right support with all of the municipalities and making sure that we do everything that we can in our power to make sure that they have the everything necessary to conduct this election.
Do you think that with so much of the ballots shifting over to absentee ballots, will that, do you think, cause a delay in finding the outcome of the election?
Yes, and it's very important to understand what this is going to do in Milwaukee County. Typically, we have seen where we're not done somewhat to 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. We're anticipating this election will be no different with all of the machines we have, with all of the ballots we have. We are looking at completing the election approximately at 3 a.m. So we just want everyone to be patient with us, be patient and understand the process. When the results are shown on our website and it's safe, it's at 100%. We also have a tag, a banner letting you know that that does not include Central Count. We have to be 100% at the polling locations in order for Central Count to send in their results. Once they send in their results and they are at 100%, we will remove their names off of the list or we will tag them some way so you will know for sure that your count is in. So we just ask everyone to be patient, understand the process, because right now of all of the ballots that will be cast of the 551 total registered voters in Milwaukee County at this point, 234,936 of those individuals decided to cast their ballot through absentee voting. So, and because of that, we know that it's going to take a lot of time, and we ask people to be patient with us as we do this, because we want to make sure that every vote is counted on election night.
Well, let's take Suzanne now in Milwaukee. Hi, Suzanne. We're a bit short on time. Go ahead.
My question is anybody watching the Postal Service to know that ballots that are mailed by the appropriate date are actually going to be received in the appropriate post office in time to be counted?
Suzanne, thanks. Julietta?
Yes, we are working directly with the Postal Service. We have meetings with them on a regular basis, and we're to verify and making sure that and everyone has a relationship with their Postal Service and their postmaster to making sure that those ballots are received. Throughout the day, the municipalities go directly to the Postal Office to receive ballots, and that will occur as well on Election Day.
Pam, what is it like with your relationship with your postmaster?
We also have a relationship with them and had communication. We are a smaller community, so I know that on Election Day, if ballots are received that day, they are going to dispatch their employees to get them to my office so that we can get them out to the correct polling place.
Well, Pam, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
And Julietta, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
That was Julietta Henry, Elections Director for the Milwaukee County Election Commission. Pam Ubrig is City Clerk of Oshkosh. Just ahead, in a world of 24-hour news and endless scrolls of information, we talk with an author about cutting through the BS, if you will. It's part of the name of a new book. The subtitle, I Can Say, The Art of Skepticism in a Data-Driven World. We'll dismantle misinformation next hour. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to The Ideas Network.